You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Cavs. I'm Chris Manning from FearTheSword.com. Joining me today is Evan Demerell at AmNotEvan on Twitter. You can find his writing at Forbes at FearTheSword. Evan, thank you for joining me in what is a very, you and I were talking about this before we got going, but it's just like a boring-ish time to be thinking about the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, it's pretty underwhelming for sure.
All right, so we are in, it's July 8th, we're recording this, you're listening to this on July 9th, or perhaps a little time in the future after that. The Cavs have made no free agent moves. The only signings they've made are signing their rookies to their contracts, Dean Wade signed a two-way contract. They haven't done anything else. David Nwaba, of course, became an unrestricted free agent when they, you know, didn't extend him a qualifying offer as sort of part of an agreement they had with Nwaba and his camp. The JR thing got pushed to a week from today as we're recording this. There's not a lot going on. Evan, I just want to say, like, I'm not surprised. Kobe Altman said this as much on draft night, basically that, like, they're not going to be players. They're, again, $56 million over the cap, $12 million over the luxury tax line right now. So this isn't a team that's going to be spending money anyway. But when you look at just what has been this Cavs offseason, which is basically the draft being very vaguely linked to Justin Holiday and the David Nwaba thing, what have you just made of what we've seen from Kobe Altman and the Cavs this summer?
I mean, you said it perfectly. Financially, there's not a lot they can do right now. The J.R. Smith contract situation kind of has the team in limbo. They could flip him if they want for an asset, but at this point, I think fans and myself included have kind of overvalued it, and I think it's just JR is going to end up getting waived and the team moves on and gets underneath the luxury tax threshold. But I don't know. It's just been, like you said, it's just been a very quiet offseason, which is not very much like the Cavs and years past. I mean, I guess that's what you get when you have to deal with life after LeBron. You're going to be strapped for cash for a while, but not a lot you can do there. But I don't know. The Justin Holiday thing is definitely interesting. I think he would be not a bad option, depending on how much he wants. I could see him getting priced out too for the Cavs, because I've also read that Chicago is interested, and I'm sure Chicago, I'm not off the top of my head, has the financial flexibility to bring him back in. But the Cavs have a lot of big guys and a lot of guards, ball-dominant guards to be specific, on the roster right now, and not a lot of wing depth behind Jetty. And I think Kevin Porter Jr. at this point is going to be kind of forced to play some small forward just because of his size. So I'd be open to having Justin Holiday. I think he'd be great. Let's temper our expectations of it. It's not going to be like, oh, he's the piece that's going to push Cleveland to the playoffs, but he'd be a warm body, I guess, and at least something of intrigue to check out while we watch the team kind of retool and reload.
So when you look at the Cavs roster, like, as it is of actually who is on contract, there are what, like, three players that, or maybe four if John Henson's healthy, that, like, sort of know what they're doing on defense. And, like, Jetty could get there, but he was bad last year. And, like, when you're asking Jetty to defend threes and fours and not twos and threes, like, that's just gonna not set him up for success. So it's just like they were the worst defensive team in the league last year.
Yeah,
they're probably gonna, you could make an argument that this roster is set up to be worse on that end, and like, that's fine. I don't think, like, John Beilein was ever gonna come in and revolutionize defense. They did not hire him to do that, but It's just and when you just look at this, like, when you look at this Cavs summer, I don't think they've, like, it's not like, I think with the JR thing, which is, will probably go down besides the draft, is what we reflect on most, I would guess, unless something unexpected happens, like a Kevin Love trade or whatever. I would just say, like, the JR thing, it just seems like, to me, the only read I have on this is that they are holding out for, like, a really good asset. Because I am, like, not going to ever say, like, a very rich person or whatever, like, shouldn't pony up when you own a sports team. Like, if you buy the team, like, pay the tax. But if I can also understand, like, when this Cavs team, by most models that are out right now, are not going to be good next year. We can look on the roster and all the rookies and all the stuff. Like, they're probably not going to be good next year. It should be one of the worst 5-6 teams again in the league next season, I would guess, even with Kevin Love. That's just where I have them at this current moment. You could disagree with that. People could disagree with that. It's fine.
I don't disagree at all. Yeah, trust me.
We'll get into that. They're going to be super bad. But when you look at this, unless you're getting, like, a primo asset for JR, I'm cool with just, like, don't pay the luxury tax. Like, there is no reason for me to pay the luxury tax for what this team is. Like, that's just, like, I just don't get why you would do that, right? Like, and there are other ways to get under the tax. Like, you could flip other guys, you could stretch things, whatever you want to do. But, like, JR is the escape hatch, unless you're getting, like, a top 15 pick or a young player you like. Or, like, a guy who's, like, on a fair value for a couple seasons that's cost-controlled for a team that will have some captures going forward. I think it'd be fine. It'd be anticlimactic. It would be kind of an unfun buildup. But if they just let him go on July 15th and, like, save a bunch of money, I think that's okay.
No, I totally agree. Dan Gilbert, a lot of people don't give him enough credit for how willing he was to spend during the LeBron years. And last year was just kind of a transition to life after LeBron, and you have a lot of veteran players that have a lot of money committed to him. And I agree, it just doesn't make sense financially to be over the luxury tax when at best you could probably win 25, 30 games next year. And the defense is probably going to be worse compared to last season. So it's I totally agree. Like, it just doesn't make sense. It seems silly to be over the luxury tax just to put a winning product a losing product on the floor.
Have you seen, have there been any free agency signings that you've seen other teams make that you've liked, that you kind of wonder why the Cavs maybe weren't in on that? They have not been linked to very many people, but is there anything out there that you think that has really caught your eye in any regard?
I had to temper my expectations a little bit just because, for Forbes, we had to do a free agency preview, and I messaged my editor and just said, listen, man, there's nothing this team can do right now. It's just a couple of, like, cheap guys they could target. And, like, one guy I kind of had my heart set on was Stanley Johnson, but, he got nabbed up by Toronto the other day on a 2-year, $7.5 million deal. And that probably priced him out for sure with the Cavs. I mean, maybe the appeal of getting more playing time versus what he might get in Toronto could help lower his value, and maybe they can get a wink-wink deal like David Nwaba did. But it's been, like you said, there's just not a lot of names linked to the Cavs, and I think they're trying to find a way to get under the tax and maybe target some of these cheaper young asset or young guys out there. But it seems murky. It doesn't seem like there's going to be a lot of movement when it comes to actual names. But other free agent signings, I mean, I think what the Clippers have done are really smart. I'm starting to kind of put the pieces together myself. Patrick Beverley said, I think it was from, I forget who he said, he had a pretty substantial offer from, but he went back to the Clippers on a cheaper deal. And I'm starting to believe that maybe they're, like, letting him on, saying, like, hey, we might have Kawhi Leonard in the bag right now, so why don't you come back for a little bit less and stuff like that. Like, I think the way the Clippers have constructed their roster is really good. Surprisingly enough, people like to knock the Bulls a lot, but Chicago's made a lot of smart signings this summer and a lot of smart moves in general, and I think they're setting themselves up pretty nicely. I really like what Indiana did with getting Brogdon from Milwaukee. It's just taking advantage of a team who had two big free agents in Brogdon and Middleton that they had to pay for, and they took advantage of it by outbidding Milwaukee for Brogdon, and I think that's a great pickup for them. It's just kind of stinks watching a lot of teams. I mean, even Detroit recently has popped up as a popular target for Russell Westbrook, and I mean, I'm not a fan of that move, but I guess if you're a team that's struggling to put butts in the seats, that's a really good way to do it. And it just kind of stinks to watch a lot of teams in your division make all these moves, and you're just sitting on the wayside just watching.
So I agree. I think the only, like, Stanley Johnson's a name for me that is like that. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who also, you know, went to Toronto, you know, also made sense to that. Pat McCaw, who went back to Toronto. Like, Toronto basically just the kind of youngy, cheapy wings the Raptors have signed are kind of the things I would have looked at. But there's, like, not nothing else. And when you look at the roster, like, okay, I don't think Marquise Chris is going to be back. I've poked around that. I don't know where he's going to be next year. I'd be very surprised if it was in a Cavs uniform. When you look at the roster, will someone from Summer League get a roster spot? Will Nick Stauskas come back? Will Nwaba come back? We're 10 days removed from him kind of not having his offer kind of put out there, but he's not been linked to anyone that, as far as I know, and that is sort of says something about what he is, and that was the case for him last year as well. But could he come back on part of the taxpayers middle over or something like that? There are avenues where they could do something, and I wonder just sort of how they do fill it out. They'll have, if the JR thing, the JR is not going to be in the roster if they cut him. Chris isn't back. You have some room to add on the end of the roster. I wonder what they do with it. I don't think they're going to leave those necessarily kind of out there. Maybe Marquise Bolden, who's been kind of a fun summer league prospect, or one of these other guys on the summer league roster could get it. But for me, it's just it's not going to be anything splashy, right? It's going to be a Nick Stauskas back on the minimum or something.
I can see Stauskas definitely being an option. To be fair,
I'd be fine with that. He can give you some shooting. They need some guys who can just shoot threes and don't need the ball in their hands.
And he's familiar with Coach Bayline and his system. So, that's a little bit of a wrinkle that you could have going into that. And since he's been underwhelming across the board, and ever since he was drafted, I think he can come back on a pretty cheap deal. And I've been kind of tooling with the idea, and I wrote about this for Forbes a while ago, but ever since Channing retired, I know, I've spoken to Kevin and Channing and Tristan about it, and Channing's kind of left his mark on those two, especially to carry the torch as the veteran leader in the locker room. But since it's kind of a fluid situation with Tristan being expiring and people, and myself including, thinking Kevin might be on his way out of town, I think maybe targeting a veteran to fill out a roster spot would be good. And I've always been open to the idea of having Vince Carter come in. Vince Carter's been pretty open to be in rebuilding situations the last few years. He's just out here because he loves to play basketball, and he's trying to leave his mark and, I guess, his legacy with some of these younger players. And you look at a guy like Kevin Porter Jr., who Kobe Altman and the front office have been enamored with for a while, based on what I've read and everything. And I think having a guy like Vince Carter or other veterans to help just kind of guide him so that his natural God-given abilities can be used and kind of get past some of the mental roadblocks that he has would be huge in his development, and I think would be great for the Cavs long term.
I would be very – I don't buy jerseys anymore. I cover teams. I don't root anymore. I would buy the shit out of a Vince Carter Cavs jersey.
I would too.
That's my kid, if he went to OU or she went to OU and wore that to a fest, or they went to Coachella, if Coachella is around, or if the world exists in 2050, I would be super down for the Vince Carter Cavs jersey. I don't know if that's what he's going to do. But, if you look at where he signed, he played in Sacramento, he played in Atlanta as sort of the adult in the room in the situations. I'd be very down for that. Channing would have – if they could have got Channing to come back another year, I think that would have been really cool. Obviously, he has things he wants to go do, and I don't blame him for that. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with more from Evan and I. So stay tuned for more of Locked on Cavs. All right, we're back. Evan, let's just quickly touch on Summer League. I don't have a lot of Summer League takes because I don't think Summer League's been interesting. No. When Dylan Windler hit that shot in Utah, and that was the highlight of it. We're not going to see Kevin Porter. Despite, I know for a fact that Darius Garland is healthy. They're just taking it very slow with him. Jetty's not playing. Ante Zizic isn't playing. I think some of the guys that they've had play, Marquise Bolden and some others, have been interesting. You're not seeing Jaron Blossom game, who could be, even though they let him go, could be back on a two-way. Beeline's not really, he's coaching and is involved, but when he's not really, he's not going to get as much from this as even, he's going to get something from this, but not a lot. The stuff that I think will ultimately matter from this summer league is the stuff we're not going to see. Joe Vardon had a story about this in The Athletic on Monday about just Sexton and Garland kind of bonding. They bonded over being sneakerheads and stuff and them going shoe shopping. That's the kind of stuff that will carry over into the season, because we're not going to see anything on court. But I just don't have, it's like hard for me to get excited about Summer League. And I think we're like, we're heading into some sort of era where like maybe Summer League is just not where we're going to see the best prospects play more than a game or two. And that's fine. It's an open chance for guys that need the exposure to try out, but it also just makes it a less compelling product for me to watch on my TV to theoretically go out to Vegas or Utah or wherever.
No, I totally agree. And, it's for sure disappointing. Sexton, Jetty, Garland, Porter, Zizek are all out, and those are kind of the bigger, to an extent, names that'll be in the part of the Cavs rotation next year. So it's definitely tough. And I mean, Colin Sexton was legitimately exciting last year in Summer League. So I think I was listening to the Chase Down the other day. And Justin brought up that like a lot of people were kind of on the fence about the Sexton pick, but I think seeing him kind of flex his muscles and try and lock up Josh Hart when he was still with the Lakers at the time in the summer in the Vegas tournament, it just kind of made him exciting and kind of sold a lot of people on the pick. And I think that's fine. I think it's fine that the Cavs are taking a cautious approach. Colin played 82 games this year and he worked his butt off. Darius Garland's been away from the court. I mean, he's by all reports in fine shape. I'm sure he could play if he wanted to, but
I would just to emphasize that I talked to his high school coach the night of the draft. His high school coach said he's healthy, and his high school coach was like with his family, stays in contact with Darius, like knows what's going on. Darius Garland is healthy. They are just being cautious, which I completely understand. Kevin Porter Jr. isn't, like, super hurt, but he got hurt in the pre-draft process. They're taking it slow with him. Like, these are things that I can rationalize.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think, like, you touched on it really well. It's just at this point, maybe every now and then, maybe they'll be, like, you get a little bit of star time. Like, Zion played for a little bit for the Pelicans, and I still thought like, okay, maybe he plays one game and they shut him down. RJ Barrett, I'm surprised, is still playing. I'm surprised the Knicks haven't shut him down. Like, you get him out there to like draw some hype and excitement leading into training camp and preseason for your star rookies, but totally handle them with kid gloves. And it's more so auditions for guys who you may want to take a look, gamble on with a two-way contract, or maybe in the Cavs case, like there's a few players I think could and very well end up in Canton this year. And I think if push comes to shove, or if the injury bug bites the team hard again, like they're possible assets to get call ups and just maybe get a little bit of burn with the team. But they're players you want to spend time with now, that maybe you bring to training camp and then eventually you send them down to Canton, but you keep them in your back pocket as options for long term, which I think is fine.
Do you have any takes on any of the guys we've seen in Summer League? Any guys that for you have at least like intrigued you in some way?
I actually really like Nas Long. Nas Mitchell Long. I butcher his name every time I say it out loud. But I was reading what Chris Fedor was saying about him today. Like, he's really impressed Antonio Lang and the coaching staff. And then Fedor went on to say that the Cavs internally view him in a similar mold to Quinn Cook, who spent a lot of time in Canton developing and then bounced around the league a little bit and then eventually ended up with Golden State and carved out a role. Now for a minute before the Lakers said LeBron was their starting point guard, I thought was going to be slotted to be the Lakers starting point guard next year. And I mean, can't say that Long will have the same career trajectory. It's a little tough to say because Summer League, it's kind of hard to gauge sometimes, but I've been really impressed with him. He's just been playing really hard. He clearly is trying to carve out a spot, maybe with a team, even if it's at the Cavs and NBA team, and he's played really well for them. And like Knight and Dellavedova are expiring contracts this year, and I could see Delly coming back possibly, but I could see Brandon Knight going. And if Delly goes too, it gives the Cavs an option to maybe just throw Long out there as the backup point guard behind Sexton and Garland as that third guard on the depth chart that, I don't know. I mean, the Cavs aren't going to be winning a lot of games this year. It's okay to take a gamble on some of these guys and see what you get, and maybe in real NBA minutes. And if it ends up like a Dellavedova situation where you get a long-term backup point guard that you can use as an asset later on, great. Or it could just end up like Cameron Payne, where it's just you hope it's going to work out, then it just ends up being a failure to launch.
I wonder if anyone has a campaign Cavs jersey or jersey. If you do, at me on Twitter, at C. Dimmerant. I would like love to see physical proof of it. If you were to look at, they have Dean Wade, who's the pick and pop four. I think he's showed some interesting stuff. when you look at just – they have that one other two-way spot. Dean Wade's only on a one-year two-way, which is interesting. But is there a guy that – in or a positional need you would say you'd kind of like them to fill with that other two-way spot?
I really like Marquise Bolden a lot. I was kind of under – I sporadically watched basketball or college basketball this year, and Duke was probably one of the teams I watched, you know, since the Cavs were not very good. So – I was just checking out the best team in the collegiately just to set my hopes too high for Zion and everything. But Bolden actually has looked pretty well. I think he's going to be an interesting long-term project, but he's played with a ton of energy and he's hustled a lot in games and just the rim protection and I don't know, his general fluidity looks really nice on the floor. And obviously, like, it's going to take him a little bit probably to translate to the NBA level. But if the Cavs were to take a two-way flyer on him, I'd be down for that. And you touched base on Jaron Blossom game before. He's another guy I'd be pretty comfortable with them just giving a two-way contract to. You reported a while ago that he was an unrestricted free agent, but he was on the summer league roster. And even though he's injured, he's still hanging out with the team. He's sitting on the bench. He's still acting as a cheerleader. Joe Vardon in his article today on Monday touched on him and Sexton being super close, which I think is a good thing to have some of your young guys being tight in the locker room. So I think bringing him back wouldn't be a problem either. Plus it would address the wing depth problem, because when Blossom Game did play for the Cavs last year, he looked solid in the minutes he got. And he's just another player that maybe you take a long look at and see, give him some burning Canton if there's no time for him up with the Cavs, but just another guy to maybe take a look at.
Yeah, I like the idea of Blossom Game quite a bit. I think, like, the shooting is a real concern, and, like, that doesn't make me, like, feel good about what he might be, but I can get behind him. I think Bolden makes a lot of sense. I think just him, he's been really impressive, has looked like he's got some athleticism. Not as long, you know, can make some sense, I think. He's just kind of been around the team a little bit, but like Yovel Zuzman was like a first round prospect in a lot of people's minds, and I don't know what's up with him exactly. I've been trying to figure that out and I can't quite get a read on it, but he'd be
neither can I. It's really weird because a lot of draft Twitter guys, Trevor Magnani included, were really surprised that he didn't get drafted. But Trevor told me that even if the Cavs offered him a two-way, he might not offer it because he has a four-year contract offer from Maccabi Tel Aviv on the table. So.
Right, which wouldn't surprise me, and I think that's maybe why, like, he's not, like, you know, maybe that's why they got him in and he didn't play and stuff. Like, I wonder if there's just some of that kind of, like, letting them be, trying to build the relationship, see what they got, but without, like, putting the guy at, like, a serious injury risk or whatever if he has that guaranteed money waiting for him, you know, back in his home country. I also wonder if, like, if maybe he's a candidate for a roster spot that can open up. Like, if they go really young in that spot and just want to, like, lock him in as opposed to, like, having him on a two-way. If that's, like, if they think highly enough of him. I don't know, but I just, like, there's going to be something like that that I think we'll look at and see kind of what the Cavs do. But I think I would go wing or Bolden. I like Nazlong. I don't think guard is exactly what I would do considering the glut that they have. You're not going to get value out of him at the NBA level probably, but you know they could go that way as well. And we're getting, like, I'm recording this. I have Cavs Celtics Summer League on, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't know, like, really what I'm supposed to be getting out of a lot of this because there's just not a whole lot exactly. Like, Windler's playing and he's been fine, but you know, what are you really going to do? All right, we're going to take one last break, and then we're going to touch just on Kevin. This Kevin Love piece Evan wrote. You know, Greg Schwartz and I talked about this already this week, but it's a big thing for the Cavs this summer, and we just want to touch on it from there. So stay tuned for more of Locked On Cavs. I'm going to cede the floor to you. I've talked about this a lot. I think, like, a Kevin Love trade can't be ruled out. I'm not in a rush to do it, though. You wrote a piece about this before, but people can find that in the show notes. Just what do you make of the idea that Kevin Love could be on the move between now and the deadline next year?
I could see him getting moved this summer, and I could see him not getting moved this summer. I've talked to Kevin about it directly. There was that report on it was kind of like the perfect storm when supposedly when Darius Garland and Dylan Windler being introduced to the press, Jason Lloyd was on video and talked about how Kevin requested to be traded and everything, and then just kind of flew under the radar because everybody else is at the press conference. But then Channing said, I'd love to see Kevin in Portland, and then that just kind of snowballed out of control. And I'm like,
that was like a tweet. I was like, this is like too, like, there's something interesting there just because, like, and he had all the Instagrams in Portland, and
yeah,
and he's from there, and like, you know, Channing's just like sharing takes and probably like enjoying an adult beverage or two, but like, yeah. That's kind of weird.
I mean, the Instagram things, I just think it's our supermodel power forward and living his best life in the off season. Kevin Love.
I'm like here for the Hawkins PD sweatshirt he was wearing on Monday. Like, I'm here for Kevin Love enjoys his best life.
Yeah, I totally am too, and he deserves it. But it's just, it's a tricky situation because when they offered the contract extension to him and he signed it, I had a little bit of rose-tinted glasses because still a little stung that LeBron left him. Great, it's earlier today, and I completely ignored all the red flags that came with it. And then he got hurt, and I said, great, we have a power forward entering his 30s who has a serious injury history who we're going to be committing a ton of money to, and no team's going to want to kick the tires on it. And so just kind of like – and then it's from the Cavs, it seemed like they're adamant about it. And like I said on my latest piece for Forbes, it's just – part of it maybe feels like the Cavs are trying to save face. Like, listen, this extension wasn't stupid, you guys. I swear it wasn't a bad idea at all. And it's just – maybe that's just me being a little tinfoil hatty about it. But after, like, a lot of what I've noticed in free agency is it's no longer going to be super teams, at least for a few years. Kyrie and Durant could definitely break the mold, depending on how Kevin Durant comes back, because that could be a pretty lethal 1-2 punch. But you can make the case for quite a few teams to be in the run for a championship next year. And I definitely like the Portland thing, like we just touched on. I feel like their Western Conference run was a bit of a fluke. It just like they're getting hot at the right time, and Oklahoma City kind of falling apart, and that Denver series could have gone either way, but then they're crushed by Golden State. And I mean, what are you going to do? It's probably one of the greatest teams, not probably, it is the greatest team ever assembled. And it's just like, I think they're one piece away. And I think Oklahoma City, even after the Paul George trade, I don't think Russell Westbrook's going to be that easy to move. And it's a big if Westbrook doesn't get traded and he ends up going back to Oklahoma City, I could see Kevin Love being realistic. They have to be considering being competitive because it doesn't make a lot of sense to try and compete or try and be bad with a MVP player who's going to try and get, or MVP caliber player who's trying to get a triple double every night. He's going to try and win even while he pads his stats, and that just hurts your rebuild in the long term. So why not just try and see what you can get out of the last few years out of a point guard that nobody else really wants because of just his injury history and how he plays. And so I think he's a Kevin Love target. They're a Kevin Love target too. And it's just, but back what I was saying before I get ahead, it's just, it feels like there's a little bit of a parity in the league right now. And those two teams to me just kind of feel interesting where you can pull the trigger on a guy who could be available. And he's the biggest name, in my opinion, that's available on the trade market that a team like the Cavs would be willing to listen to offers for him. And it's definitely interesting. And if I don't see him getting moved, if he doesn't get moved this summer, I wouldn't bat an eye. But by the deadline, I think that's probably where things are going to heat up, where a team would definitely be interested in trying to trade for him.
So here's my thing with this. I don't quite know how to gauge what kind of value he's actually worth.
It's tough.
I think the biggest variable here that I don't have enough sourcing or anything to like really like figure out about. What is it like? What is this league that feels open, and what is it going to take for a team to pony up like an offer that's really going to tempt the Cavs? And what is that offer? Like, we don't really know. You know, is it Zach Collins and picks? Is it two of those young players from Portland? Is it like another team? Is it, you know, like could have been Oklahoma City if like they had kept their guys together? Like, I don't really know. I'm very interested to see what it would be if they do something. You know, could it be Indiana? Could it be like, you know, funny enough, like could would Minnesota want to throw some Zubats out there to pair him with Cat? Like, would Kevin even like that? I would guess probably not. I just, like, don't quite know what the value is. I think my baseline of this is probably something like intriguing young player and either another young player and salary to match and a pick, or just, like, something that gets you, like, two to three things. Like, I think you need to get more than one asset, because not only do you need that to just help you keep building correctly and accumulate assets and do kind of rebuild that stockpile, but I don't think, like, your fan base is going to, like, and you can't make every decision like this. You have to go out and sell the decisions you do make. But, like, if you trade Kevin Love and you get, like, a crappy pick and, like, a young player that's not, like, super interesting back, I don't know how that goes over, and I just don't know what that quite means for people's interest in the team right now. Like, there's already just people that, like, just view this organization as, like, hard to kind of cover, and I don't agree with that mindset, but I also think, like, I can understand if they're not super into it for whatever reason.
No, I agree with that for sure. It's tough to gauge his value on the market, but I kind of outlined in the article with Forbes, like, you have to have matching salary, and for Oklahoma City right now, it would be Steven Adams would be the biggest contract that they could offer, not named Russell Westbrook, because if the Cavs brought in inexplicably traded Kevin Love for Russell Westbrook, I'd eat the hat that's on my head right now. But Steven Adams, I think, would be the target in Oklahoma City, and then in Portland it'd have to be like Hassan Whiteside, and then there's just bonuses within that. So if you, let's say you traded in the Portland for Whiteside, and then you bring back either Nasir Little or Gary Trent, if this is what I laid it out, and it's just, it would be, and then possibly like a few draft pickers, something like that. You'd have to be able to spin something out of it, like a young player like Little, or a draft pick is fine. And then in Oklahoma City's case, like, you get Steven Adams, who's a pretty young center already, but again, that just comes back to the Cavs problem with, they have a lot of money committed right now to Larry Nance, and why would you want to commit more money to Steven Adams? But it's just definitely a weird situation where it's tough to gauge his value, but I think that there will be some teams out there that are desperate enough to say, like, I think we have what it takes to make a run at an NBA title, because Kevin Durant's sidelined for the year in Golden State. Their situation is just really fluid right now, because we don't know 100% when Klay Thompson will be back, and I think D'Angelo Russell is just going to be a trade chip for them. So you have to take advantage of the window, and I think there will be a few teams out there that feel the pressure. But back for Cleveland, though, it can be tough. I mean, it's a pretty – last season when Kevin Love was out, it was tough sometimes to just, like, sit down and watch the game, because you're like, okay, well, they lost again. How do I spin this in a different way? But there's definitely interesting stories within it, but it definitely pushes away the casual fan for sure, because Kevin Love is a big name, and it would definitely be tough, but – that's where maybe you wait till the deadline, and maybe, let's say, like, Darius Garland is a lights out shooter and he really is playing like a future star that is, some of the draft scouts are saying that he would have been if he played the full season at Vanderbilt, or you have Kevin Porter Jr. who finally puts it all together and he puts together a solid string that generates enough excitement that the Cavs can kind of sell to the fan base, like, listen, we might stink right now, but look at these young guys. They're showing a ton of potential. Give us a year or two, and we get rid of the last few pieces of the championship roster, and we can be back in the playoffs. And I think that's a lot easier to stomach. So it's a bit of a gamble, and I think at that point, maybe you have to start looking closer to the deadline than you do over the summer.
Last thing, would you say – I would say this. I would wait to trade him until the deadline. That's just like I would – unless you are blown away – I would not do it before the start of the season, unless Kevin came and he was like, I want to start my next season somewhere else, and you're just trying to accommodate him. But I just don't see the advantage of doing it until you, like, can at least just see what things look like and can help set a Garland and Sexton and stuff for success.
No, I agree. Like, it has to be a pretty mind-blowing offer, but it's just, I think the point of my piece was saying, like, the Cavs were pretty against the idea of trading Kevin Love, but now the way that things are starting to shake up, I think they need to start entertaining the thought of it. And I think by the deadline, that's a more realistic target, because he is going to play a big part in the development of Sexton. I mean, the Cavs flat out played better when Kevin Love was healthy last season. And I would like to see that to start the season as well, because it also helps out Bayline too, because it's going to be a little bit of an awkward transition at first from college to the pros. And I think, I mean, the coaching staff he's assembled is going to be great around him, and I think the expectations aren't going to be super high for him right out the gate. But I think having a all-star forward on your roster to kind of help out the team and help out your coach is huge. And I think if it starts just to build a culture of success and it trickles down to the rest of the young guys, I think it'll be a lot easier for the Cavs to stomach at that point to trade him.
Yeah, Evan, thank you so much for coming on. Any just final thoughts on Summer League? Anything you kind of think people should look for as we kind of go through the rest of the offseason? Any just last things we didn't touch on?
I just think people need to keep tempering their expectations. Every time a big-name player comes out and is going to be traded, don't expect the Cavs to be a part of it. It's going to be a slow burn of a rebuild, but I think it'll be worth it in the end, because last season definitely was tough at points to watch. It wasn't fun to watch, but when Kobe Altman had his end of year wrap up with the media, just the way he talked and how he was able just to be so positive in such a what was a crappy season for the team, is definitely refreshing to hear. And I think he has a vision, and I think that Dan Gilbert is comfortable with him executing that vision. So I think it'll be worth it. It's the boring times like these will make it worth it long term.
Evan, thank you so much again. Find him on Twitter at @AmNotEvan. Again, read his writing at Fear the Sword and more often at Forbes, but he's going to be with us at Fear the Sword, hopefully back on the podcast well in the future. Thanks so much for coming on. All right.